It's the Game of Roses. Welcome to the Game of Roses. This is the Game of Roses. Welcome to the Game of Roses.
Welcome to Game of Roses. I'm Pace Case.
I'm Bachelor Clues.
This is going to be a two-parter episode. First, we're going to talk about some Bachelor Nation news, and then we're going to get back to our How to Win the Bachelor miniseries and talk about the equipment that you need to win the game.
Well, the equipment that all players enter the game with. This is standard equipment. Just like if you're a baseball player, you don't walk on the field without a glove and a bat. If you're a player of our beloved game, there are some pieces of equipment that you will have intrinsically available to you, and we're going to go through what those are and how to use them. But first, big news this week.
What's going on?
As you know, here on Game of Roses, we like to step behind the curtain and analyze not just the game, but all the various pieces of it. What the things we see in public media actually mean and what's actually going on behind the scenes, behind the tweets, behind the Instagram posts. And this week, there were a few tweets that came out from the creator of The Bachelor, Mike Fleiss. It was his wife who tweeted out some stuff.
The Dark Lord Emperor Fleiss?
Yes, he's kind of like the emperor to Chris Harrison's Darth Vader, if you will, in my mind anyway.
Yes.
So the scandal that's been going on between Mike Fleiss and his wife is essentially...
They had a divorce settlement, right? He agreed to pay her $10 million. They were going to split 50-50 custody of their four-year-old son. And she agreed to drop her domestic violence restraining request against him, right?
I'm not sure exactly that. I know she accused him of domestic violence. They were going through some kind of custody arbitration. And then she just tweeted out this week, "Over the summer, my husband and I went through a challenging time, as all marriages do. There was an emotionally charged incident in which we fought over a phone and both exhibited immature and irresponsible behavior. The situation led to making rash decisions we both regret. However, I would like to correct the erroneous reporting that my husband intentionally tried to attack and hurt me. That is untrue. We both take full responsibility for our actions and have worked very hard to repair the damage to our relationship and family. And we are working together with the help of a marriage counselor to rebuild what we lost. I love @Fleissmeister. And our kids very much. We appreciate your support at this time."
Great, she tagged him.
There's so much to unpack in these messages. It is the litigious wording of all of it. Clearly, this was written by lawyers. Clearly, it is the result of her accepting some kind of a settlement to just let those charges go. Now, there's video of him hitting her in the fucking face. TMZ has it. It's on the internet. Anyone can look it up.
Was that over the phone?
I think that's the incident that she's referring to, yes. Mm. But it clearly is physical assault. She's waiving that. In exchange, I can only imagine, for some money. But the fact you're bringing up is insane to me. In the posts, she doesn't say Mike or my husband. She refers to him as Fleissmeister, his fucking Instagram handle. And we are now in this era of our beloved game where it's not only the players. This would be tantamount to like the commissioner of the NFL getting embroiled in something, and then his wife tweets out his Instagram handle name. They only know each other now by their Instagram handles. Even Mike Fleiss's wife is part of this, but she was a former Miss America. She herself is kind of contestant-like, player-like. He snapped her probably out of like an audition tape or something. I don't know how they met. That's just conjecture. Don't take it as
probably
fact.
A casting couch situation.
I don't think it's unreasonable to think she tried to get on The Bachelor and he was like, "I want that one for myself."
Yeah, save her.
That's where we are. Her post came out and, you know, it's just back to the same old for us, where we have to now reconcile, why do we keep watching this show? Why are we doing what we're fucking doing, analyzing it? I mean, what are we doing? Fuck it. I have to get that out of my head. We got to keep going. We got to press on.
At Bachelor Clues continues. I mean, you got to be known by your handle.
It's like, do we want to keep giving this guy money?
If it makes us money, yeah.
It doesn't make us money.
It will. We're going to start getting these promotions.
Oh.
We are coming out with a book, and it is going to be the best book you've ever read.
I think people will enjoy the book, but And maybe that will make us some money. We're doing this podcast, though, for the love of the fucking game. Or for the hate of the game, I should say. It's for the hate of the game. That's why we do both. It.
How long after the assault charges is this news?
I don't remember. That happened a couple of months ago. It was during Bachelor in Paradise, when Bachelor in Paradise was still airing.
I'm seeing this TMZ article that says there are documents that she claimed Mike has chipped away at Laura's self-esteem, telling her that she was fat and lazy and calling her names like a low-rent gold digger and a 50 grand whore. She also says he told her he's going to end up fat and single in Kenosha, Wisconsin, the heartland.
I think that's where the great one is from, Nick Viall.
He is Wisconsin, isn't he?
I think so. Good breeding ground for Bachelor players there, I guess. But in some ways, maybe Mike Fleiss's wife is the greatest player ever. In some ways, she didn't even have to play the game. And she's making more money than anybody.
True.
The house that they have in Hawaii, where the assault took place, is worth $16 million. She gets half of that, maybe a little more now. I don't know what the settlement is all about that clearly happened, but anyway, it was just something that happened this week that I thought was important to bring up because it is part of our beloved game. The man who created the game and how he treats his wife, everything that's going on in their relationship, and even how they treat each other on Instagram, I feel is all kind of an important shell around the game itself. We have to always be aware of where this game came from and that from the very beginning, the intention of it was not altruistic. It was never about helping people find love. It was always about making this man as much money as possible on the backs of other people's misery, which he continues to do daily.
He tweeted back, "Happy to report that at Fleiss Laura and I have reconciled. I love my wife, and I'm grateful for this opportunity to work on our marriage. Thanks for the support, Bachelor Nation."
And then a few tweets later, "Didn't expect to be saying this, but I'm loving The Little Mermaid Live." And that's him, just right back to doing the little dance for his master company, ABC. That's an ad for their biggest live fucking thing, whatever. Okay,
the twists keep coming.
So now we've cleansed ourselves of that. I feel purged to some degree that we've talked about it. Let's move on to something a little happier in Bachelor Nation.
Ooh.
Some more big news, of course, about the greatest player to ever live, Nick Viall. He's back in the spotlight.
Patrick Clues has a twinkle in his eye. He just got energy that I have yet to see throughout our whole friendship.
Oh, Jesus.
Some Viall news.
Look.
What happened with our greatest of all time player this
week?
He
continues to impress, continues to amaze. The man is just, he's full of surprises. He's full of strategy, if we're being honest. Here's what happened this week. I don't know if anybody out there follows Us Weekly as religiously as I do, but Us Weekly is essentially like your Bible for kind of what is going on in Bachelor Nation. They're always doing exposés on people, et cetera, et cetera. So we got the news last week that Demi and Christian had broken up. Then Demi's appearing at all these parties with various players from the game, various celebrities in Bachelor Nation. She is seen out with who? Nick Viall at a party. And what are they doing in a photograph? They're holding hands. Immediately, the rumor mill starts generating rumors. Oh, fuck. Is Nick Viall and Demi dating? Are they dating? He linked himself to the most important player currently in the game through a simple handhold. They're not dating. He came out and said it. They're just friends. Whether that's true or not, it doesn't even fucking matter. The picture exists, the rumor exists, so we all now talk about it, and Us Weekly gave him a full fucking expose on this, an interview, talking about other shit in Bachelor Nation. So he put himself right back in the fucking spotlight out of thin air, out of nothing. He recognized the opportunity with Demi, and he fucking took it. He's amazing. He's the best player we've ever seen or we will ever see. I truly, firmly believe it.
Do you think that Demi and Nick planned this handhold? They were like, we're going to this party. Let's fucking start the rumor mill. Let's hold hands.
No.
Get it out there.
No.
No, you think it was all him?
Not quite all him. I mean, Demi also at this point is kind of like, she's like the Kobe Bryant to his Michael Jordan. And I think she sees in him valuable information and guidance in what is going to be her celebrity future through the Bachelor Nation.
Yeah, she's written about him guiding her through and giving her advice on her social media.
Absolutely. I think she wants to be the Bachelorette and she's going about it the right way. She's kind of vaulted herself into the spotlight as making historical firsts, just as our beloved Nick Viall did when he went on back-to-back seasons of The Bachelorette, BIP, became The Bachelor. All of these things were historic. She's done similar things. I don't think she's that Machiavellian either. I don't believe she pre-plans things to that degree. I think she's more of a fly-by-the-seat-of-her-pants and use her manipulation skills to get what she wants in the immediate now. And then if something fucking backfires, she's like, oh shit, let me back that up. Like she did with her her first girlfriend, telling her like, I'm going on The Bachelor. You got to delete all your shit.
Yeah, I need Christian to be my first girlfriend.
I'm just continually impressed by Nick Viall and what he's able to do. He's almost 40 years old. I think there is no chance for him to be back in the actual game, but he's always in the Instagram game, always in the Us Weekly game. He's always in the news of our beloved game, always. Yeah,
he's commentating on everything that's happening. He's solidifying himself kind of as like a Vin Scully type role.
Exactly. He even had a thing in Us Weekly where he was talking about there's a civil war brewing in Bachelor Nation as though he's the arbiter of it. He started to define what that civil war is.
I mean, it's, to be fair, we defined it and he's copying us, but... Yeah,
yeah, that's okay. It's a gift to you, Nick Viall. Take what we say and use it as your own. And this is a quick shout out. Thank you to Callie Rains. She is somebody who follows Bachelor Clues and Game of Roses. She sent me the stuff of Nick Viall talking about the Civil War, brought it to my attention. We can't thank you enough. We love it when our
thank you so much
listeners send us stuff that helps us to know more about Bachelor Nation, which this certainly did. And what it was Nick Viall essentially saying he believes there's a civil war brewing within Bachelor Nation. That's between people who are doing it for the gram and people who are not. What he's not quite getting at is it's actually delineated by time, and he is the line of demarcation. He's not willing to accept responsibility for it, but he really was the one to usher in what he views as kind of the new Bachelor era.
The Instagram era.
Hats off once again to the GOAT, Nick Viall. He is... He just continues to impress. I can't wait to see what he does next.
He's 39. Mm-hmm. I mean, no one in the game is relevant anywhere near that age.
That wraps up this portion of the podcast. We've handled our business, where Bachelor Nation is, and what's going on currently. Now we're going to get back into our how-to guide, how to win The Bachelor. Last time we checked in with our guide, we were talking about general strategies.
This week, our How to Win the Bachelor miniseries continues with a player's equipment that they bring into the game. Just as in any sport where you have your balls, your goals, your bats, your uniforms.
Equipment.
You know, your basket.
It's more like in football, you have your helmet, your shoulder pads, the football itself, your shoes. In baseball, they have special shoes, too, and bats, and
all
balls,
right, sports
and
guy.
Helmets. Sports guy? I'm just a fucking human being.
Balls? Are your balls your equipment?
Yeah, you can't play the game without balls in most cases.
Regardless. We're here to tell you what equipment you bring into the game. You might not even know that you have this equipment, but all players do.
Yeah, we're formalizing it. These things are real. They do exist within the game. It's never, to my knowledge, been classified like this.
No.
Or objectively kind of stated, these are your pieces of equipment. But here we go. Let's begin. What's the first one?
Our first piece of equipment, which I think when you're looking back on the show, you'll be like, of course, but it hasn't really been named. Our first piece of equipment is your personal tragedy card, your PTC.
I would argue that this is potentially your most valuable piece of equipment. You can usually only get one use out of it. A savvy player can get two uses out of it, maybe. But
yeah, we saw Blake use his personal tragedy card. He explained that there was a school shooting on one of his dates, and then in his hometown, he played it again by bringing her to the site of the school shooting.
Oh, yeah, that's true. So he used it, he doubled down on it.
Yeah.
He got a double dip.
But generally, you're playing this card once.
When do you play your PTC? It's never on night one. That's too much too soon. If you have an early one-on-one date, you don't do it then either. Because if he's asking you out on an early one-on-one date, you're probably going to get the rose and you don't need to waste it there. The kind of like most viable times, the best times to use your PTC are to fend off an attack from a fellow player. If you're starting to be cast as a villain or an adversary for another player, you can throw out your PTC. My mom died when I was 10. Sanderson Poe, we all remember. He was maybe the greatest PTC
turning
in history.
Tragedy into strategy.
Exactly.
His name was Sanderson Poe.
God. Sanderson Poe. If nobody knows Sanderson Poe, look
I mean,
it
they
up.
All know.
Look it up.
They know.
Look it up. We're not gonna. I won't spoil it for you. That is a meal that you will love. Just Google Sanderson Poe and fucking enjoy. Have yourself a 30-minute deep dive into Sanderson Poe. That's my gift to everyone listening.
Yeah. So there is a personal tragedy card sweet spot where you want to play this, and generally, hopefully it's on the offensive. Your second one-on-one date, you had a great first one-on-one date, and this is going to make you seem deeper, essentially. It's going to forge sympathy for what you've been through, and it is a surprise. You're deeper than they had imagined. Maybe you're like an onion, and they'll want to know more.
That's truly the key to it, is the two things you're getting out of it are potential sympathy and potential, as you said, deepening of your character. So if you've been the jokey one, if you, oh, I have fun with her all the time, but I just don't know if she's serious. PTC reverses that. Oh, I saw her serious side. Or if you seem to be flailing in some way, generating immediate sympathy from the bachelor, you can always do that with the PTC.
It has been referenced a little bit in the most recent season of The Bachelorette. We had Cam say he made the mistake of telling another player when he was going to play his PTC. And that player went to Hannah and said Cam was trying to get a pity rose.
Now, this is an important distinction, because the pity rose is something completely different, I feel like. Pity rose is you're using your PTC as a way to just hopefully eke out one more rose.
This is the defensive use of PTC.
Absolutely. And sometimes your back may be against the wall and you'll have to do that. But the best use of a PTC is to actually lay a seed for long term. It's the reason why your walls may be up, which we'll get to walls in a second. It's the reason why you are the way you are. And it's a piece of your history that enriches your character on the show. That's what you're hoping to do with your PTC. And you play it somewhere in the middle of the regular season. Like yes. Pace Case was saying, it's a great tool to use on a group date if you haven't had a one-on-one yet. You pull them aside and you say, look, I know there's not much time, and I don't know if I'm going to get a one-on-one, but like, there's something I need you to know about me if you're going to know all of me, and I want you to know that, because that's what the game is about. You use your 4TRR there, and then you just lay it on them, whatever it may be.
Yeah, I mean, if it's on a group date, that is a defensive use of PTC. You're sensing that maybe you're getting canned. You say, yes, you might seem closed off, but there's a very sad reason for it. But maybe you'll let down your walls for this one special person. Maybe you're nervous because your last fiance died or you had a serious illness. That can help you recover when it's seeming like you're on the rails.
And if you don't have a PTC, like a true one in your life, if you've had nothing kind of tragic happen, you just make one up. Death of a grandparent is great. Nobody's ever going to question that. If you do truly have a dead grandparent, just make sure they're not at the hometowns, all of them. When they show up and yeah. The bachelor's like, I thought this person was supposed to be dead. It's a miracle. They're alive. You can make up any variety of PTCs that just show you've been injured in some way in your life. And you have grown from that injury. Those are the two kind of most important things that a PTC has to convey. Injury and growth.
Yeah. Everyone should come in with a PTC if you're a serious player. It's also, on the defensive use of PTC, it is a great way, if you see yourself being cast as the villain, in order to pivot, you can turn the other player's hostility into sympathy by revealing your tragedy, especially if it's a really good one.
It's the villain to victim strategy.
We saw this with Kaylin. She revealed that she was raped in college, and it basically became impossible to attack her after that point.
Yeah, there are some PTCs that are immune from attack. Any kind of sexual assault, I would argue. Any kind of violent death of a family member, I would argue. Any kind of military service that results, I guess that's less common with female players than it is with male players on The Bachelorette, but
the only one I can think of is what's her face?
Luke.
Jubilee.
Oh yeah, Jubilee. But Luke Pell seemed like he had some dark secrets about the military, and I think he played it to his advantage.
Mm. Yeah, we had early on players like Catherine, who won the ring in Sean Lowe's season, said that she had a childhood friend like get crushed by a tree or something. So really be creative, thinking back on your history. Everyone's got one. You can find one. Our next piece of equipment, which we just referenced a little bit, and it kind of correlates with your personal tragedy card, is the player's walls.
One of the easiest pieces of equipment to use. It really is just about timing. You have to come into the game being hesitant. That's your wall is up when you come in. Slowly the wall can come down, or you can use a obliteration of your wall at some point to do like a massive turn of the tables on The Bachelor. But basically, you're just being a little emotionally distant. You're telling The Bachelor, hey, it's hard for me to kind of like have this emotional connection. I want it. I'm trying to do it. I think I'm getting there, but my walls are still up. And then at the right opportunity, the Bachelor will do something, or you will reveal a PTC. Some event will happen. You'll know when this is. This is somewhere in the playoffs, somewhere right before hometowns usually is when your wall comes down, or you can even save it sometimes for hometowns itself. Like, you met my family and that was it. My wall was down. They love you. I love you, et cetera, et cetera. But you're using that wall to effectively elongate your time in the game, to give the Bachelor a goal with you as a player, is to get your wall down. And then once that happens, you're good for another 2-3 rose ceremonies in some cases, depending on how high you've built the wall. I don't mean to keep talking about the greatest of all time, Nick Vial, but he wielded the wall unlike anyone I've ever seen. He wielded it in every season of The Bachelorette. He wielded it in the season of The Bachelor. And he also wielded it in Bachelor in Paradise, where nobody had, you have 2 fucking weeks. You can't wield a wall. He fucking did it. And he did it successfully.
You could argue that he became the next Bachelor because of how he wielded his walls.
I think so.
Everyone desperately wanted him to find love and to be able to open up by that point. So yeah, come into the show with your walls up. I would argue that they must come down by hometowns. You can't keep your walls up past hometowns.
I agree with you. I think it's hometowns. That's your most opportune time, unless you need to use it defensively to kind of keep yourself around.
Which most players will need to, because most players will not make it to hometowns. So shed your walls before that if you feel an exit coming.
Yeah, never leave the wall up. You never want to exit the game with that wall still up, because it is a piece of equipment that is its best used, you know? If you still have it up and you feel like you're going home, take it down immediately and let the Bachelor know, because it may keep you around for another week.
Yeah, ideally, it is a slowly building thing that leads to an emotional breakthrough around hometowns. But they can be eroded slowly. There is like a scale of walls. You say, I have walls. Then it's, my walls are starting to come down. And then it's, my walls are down. This is basically a counter scale to something that we're going to talk about next, which is another piece of equipment that every player can utilize, your love levels.
Of which there are 4 basic love levels. These are, I like you, I'm starting to fall for you, I'm falling for you, I'm in love with you. Now, master players can stretch this into 10 love levels. It can be,
yes,
I didn't know that you were going to be the Bachelor. Now that I know, I'm very surprised. My surprise is turning into, I might like you. Now I do like you. I'm starting to like you more. I'm thinking about starting to maybe fall in love with you. Now I'm starting to fall in love with you. Now I'm falling in love with you. Now I'm falling deeply in love with you. Now I'm in love with you. You can, I mean, there are kind of like middle grounds between the 4 basic ones, but the 4 basic ones are what you're really working with. That's kind of the most generic form of this equipment.
Yes.
Is, I like you, I'm starting to fall for you, I'm falling for you, I love you.
These love levels, just like the walls, should be played at key moments to help with your strategy. And some of them have to be played by certain points in your game, such as hometowns. You basically have to say, I love you, by the end of hometowns.
The love level is essentially, it's a marker for your progress through the game, and it kind of lays out a timeline. It gives the Bachelor the sense that things are moving forward with you as a player, and that you are moving forward with the Bachelor and your kind of emotional response to them. It's crucial that you want to use every love level. Absolutely. It's kind of like the walls. You don't want to leave the game knowing that you had one more level to progress. Even if it means you have to skip a few levels, if you feel like, oh shit, I might be going home, maybe you go straight for I'm starting to fall for you to I'm in love with you, and you skip the I'm falling for you part. But if you pace yourself through the season, you should be able to hit all 4 of those beats at the right times for the right effect.
It's also generally an assured way to stick around is to be the first person to get to a new level. And this can be hard to know because you don't necessarily know what the other players have. But we saw Luke P did this season on a group date. He said, I'm starting to fall for you. And it meant a lot to Hannah. She was like, oh my God, this is like starting to be real.
Luke P was the quickest love level user I've ever seen. And he had other strategies going on too that were kind of beyond the game that had nothing to do with equipment. We talked about it last week, the hyper-Christian strategy. He locked that in on night 1, and then it was like, it didn't really fucking matter what he said. He was around, you know? It can seem crazy, as all the other guys commented on him.
It will seem crazy. All of these people will seem crazy, because generally people don't tell each other they love them on their second date.
or even within the month or whatever it takes to do this in The Bachelor, but within the construct of the game, there is a regular pace of upping your love levels, and you need to kind of stick to that. In the beginning of the actual season, it's, I like you. That can be said on night one. I really like you when you're having your one-on-one conversation with The Bachelor. I'm surprised at how much I really like you.
The surprise adds to the genuine 4TRR element of that, being like, I'm surprised, but like, I'm actually into you.
It's a mini wall, essentially. You've overcome the wall of skepticism on night one. You're like, well, I thought I was going to hate this, but you're actually kind of cute. And you have a million Instagram followers. What? You can say, I like you on night one. I'm starting to fall for you. Can be on one-on-one date one. You could say that at the end, and I think you would be okay to get away with it. And that would almost guarantee, if you have an early one-on-one, that you're the first person to get to that level. I'm falling for you, I think, usually comes somewhere in the overseas round or the travel round, if they can't go overseas because Chris Soules has a DUI in America and can't leave the state. RIP to the farmer he killed. But generally, yeah, I'm falling for you is somewhere before hometowns. And then I'm in love with you is usually the end of hometowns. And that conveys you're emotionally fully through the entire cycle of the game. You've played that piece of equipment completely. And The Bachelor knows you're ready to fuck.
Yeah, we don't see players successfully go through this game without using their love levels. It is a good strategy to intersperse your love levels with your walls. Your walls are coming down and you're starting to fall. These things line up. You're basically creating a story that has twists, and you're going to slowly convey that you're 4TRR by saying these things. Most improved players, they do get rewarded for their progress. Oh, he had so many walls and they came down. That must make him more worthy.
The next piece of equipment that all players, especially on The Bachelor, this doesn't quite apply to Bachelorette, but all players on our beloved game, The Bachelor, have to master the hooju, a.k.a. the hug jump.
What is a hooju?
It's a hug jump. We all know it. We've all seen it a million fucking times. Every one of the players does it to The Bachelor every time they see him. They sprint to him. They jump into the air. They cling to him like a koala, legs wrapped around his back. This piece of equipment, it's something everyone has, something everyone wields a little bit differently. The successful users of this piece of equipment convey a few different things. It's excitement in the speed of the sprint toward him. It is a kind of sexual attraction in the closeness of the cling and how tightly you press your body against him.
Your genitals are sort of close to each other.
Genitals and secondary sex characteristics rubbing against one another. The Bachelor's always like this because, as we know, they can't really fuck you. I mean, they can, but they can't really until Fantasy Suites. So everything leading up to that, hooju or otherwise, should be in service of getting him turned on, giving him blue balls a little bit so that he's like, I gotta fucking see what she's like naked. You're in the secondary phase of the hooju when you are clinging. You're trying to convey some element of what it would be like to actually have sex with you. The third element is the length of the cling. How long are you going to stay on him? And this provides The Bachelor a few different pieces of information. One is the length of the cling is necessarily attached to how much you like The Bachelor. If you just barely cling him and get off, what the fuck does that mean? He's not about that. He wants somebody who's not going to let him go. He wants to fucking be able to get that sniff in. We know that Colton loved the fucking head sniff. And he wants to feel what you're like pressed against him. So you give him that length of time. And it also implicitly conveys
stamina.
Strength, physical strength.
Yeah. This is something that should be practiced before the season. You don't really understand how prevalent the hooju is until you see it not happen. If a bachelor meets up with one of his players and they don't hooju, which I can't remember seeing in recent history, it would look really fucking weird if they didn't jump into their arms.
It has happened before, and it's usually due to wardrobe. If you're wearing a skirt or a long dress that makes a hooju extremely hard or even impossible, then you can't hooju. So if you're on a group date, if you're on any date, you have to think about what you're wearing in terms of how it's going to affect your hooju. I mean, this is true. You laugh. This is fucking true.
Usually only like one player can get a hooju on a group date, like the first one to grab him, right?
That's been the rule so far. I say break that fucking rule. You wait for her hooju to get done. As soon as she bails off, you fucking sprint straight to him and Hooju. Hooju after Hooju can be a strong play because he has now comparative information about the two Hoojus. You watch the Hooju before you and you say, that fucking player is not clinging to him hard. That player is not clinging long. That player did not run up excited enough. Watch
I can do
this.
A better dismount than that.
I think the Hooju can be done back to back. We've not seen it. I think it's time.
Guys, you heard it here first. Experimental strategy, double Hooju.
Back to back Hooju, just like a back to back home run in baseball. No, but all kidding aside here, guys, the Hooju is super important. It's a piece of equipment that can be used literally every time you see The Bachelor, should be used literally every time you see The Bachelor, except the only time you don't use it is when you're getting out of the fucking limo. That is a no-no. Because it...
Although, that would be pretty funny.
It conveys too much. You're too excited too quickly. Getting out of the limo, you're attempting, and we'll get into this in our strategy guide about night one and how to exit the limo, but basically what you're trying to convey in that moment is skepticism and surprise at how fucking much you instantly connect with The Bachelor. So if you're hoojooing him straight out of the fucking limo, you're an insane person.
Yes.
And he's going to be pushed away by that. The hooju is to be used later. Group dates, it's great for because it also, like you're saying, establishes dominance among the other players. Whoever gets that hooju, the other players are usually turned off by it. They don't want to fucking try and double hooju him. You've already claimed the territory. But I'm telling you, back-to-back hooju, even back-to-back-to-back, fucking all 12 of them on a group date, just one after the other. Hooju. I want to see that. Who does the best hooju?
A hooju is also something that we'll talk about later, is the role of a first responder in The Bachelor. And a hooju is a slight variation on the first responder.
Kind of. But the hooju is something that all players do. All players can do. The first responder is like one person gets that.
So another piece of equipment that will vary season by season is something that we're calling trinkets. It's basically any physical object that you can give to The Bachelor in hopes of furthering your game, establishing more of an emotional connection, representing how you are for TRR. It can be something you brought in from the outside. We saw Vanessa bring in a letter from her special needs child that they taught, hoping that she found love.
Great trinket.
Yes.
Great trinket, because that. it just conveys so much. You want your trinket to convey things about your own personality, potentially about where you're from, your interests, but you also want it to convey strong interest in The Bachelor, that you're giving him this thing that's a piece of you.
Yeah, you're giving him this thing that's a piece of you, and you're also showing what that trinket basically said, that she was sacrificing a lot to go on there. She's leaving behind these special needs kids.
And that she's incredibly altruistic and has motherly sensibilities. It conveyed a lot of things. It was one of the best trinkets ever played.
Other trinkets include pictures of dogs, pictures of your kids, lucky rabbit's foot at one point. Any skillful player should brainstorm what kind of mementos they can bring with them into the game to give to The Bachelor. They can demonstrate a special skill or a passion or relationship with someone on the outside. You're going to want to use them strategically. This can include giving him a bracelet that he has to wear and all the other girls can see. Later in the game, they can be objects that are generated during your journey that represent what has happened, like pictures of you two together, a craft you made.
Poems.
Or poems. There's been a lot of poems, actually.
Yeah.
There's also Sean Lowe gave Caitlin a memory jar with like all these memories that he had written in it. It basically is conveying that you are there for TRR, and it's a physical representation of that.
But it also serves to solidify your place as a player in The Bachelor's memory. It can be a poem. It can be something creative. It can be something you've brought in from outside, but it can also be something as simple as picking up a seashell or a pebble on a beach that you are walking on, something that you give to them to remind them of your one-on-one so that you are fresh in their mind, foremost in their mind. These trinkets really represent kind of icons to The Bachelor. They used to do this, but they don't do it anymore, sadly, where they would have The Bachelor sitting in a room with the pictures of all the women thinking over. Remember that?
Yeah.
God,
pre-Instagram,
I miss that
era,
so much.
There used to be portraits that they would be in like a tiny little room where they would be facing all of the pictures of their contestants.
But I like to think that the trinkets in this game serve the function of those portraits. That in my mind, there's some room The Bachelor sits in with all the trinkets and he looks at them and he's like, oh, she gave me a poem. She gave me a picture of her dog.
What do they do with all the trinkets?
I think the producers hang on to them. And then in some cases, if you wind up with the person, if you become a couple, they keep those trinkets. I've seen them post on Instagram like, oh, this was the picture book that she gave me on our last one-on-one date or whatever, you know. They actually become a part of your longer story as a player.
But yes, that is a very good point that the Bachelor is having a hard time, especially early on, remembering the differences between all the players and remembering the special moments. And anything that you can do to help solidify that connection in his mind is a good strategy.
And the first trinket is, some players do this, they give gifts when they come out of the limo. These gifts should never be anything crazy or elaborate. Just something small to remember you by that maybe has something to do with your name or where you're from. Always a good trinket.
There's only so much that one of these can accomplish, but it will round out a player's game. Our next piece of equipment in the player's toolbox is tiers.
This is basically like shoes in another sport. It's like everybody's got to wear them, and like you literally cannot play the game without them.
They're basically the strongest thing that you can use to convey that you are 4TRR is crying.
It conveys genuine emotion, even though it doesn't necessarily mean that emotion is happening. Somebody who can wield tears well can fly through this game. They can turn almost any situation to their advantage, even if it looks like they're going down the shitter.
Yeah, they're pretty much fundamental. I don't think we've had anyone win the ring or the crown without employing the use of tears. They're basically always guaranteed to be in the promos, the commercials for next week. This is all the producers are looking for. They want shots and shots of people crying.
Take it from Ashley Iaconetti. Other than virginity, it became her primary player characteristic was that she cried all the time. And they used every frame of footage of her crying. They would cut entire packages out of it. We're not saying that generally players should be crying constantly because it does paint you as a little bit of a lunatic, but at the right times, tears are invaluable.
They're also, I'm always up for promoting anything that will become a meme, and Ashley I's tears became memes. You're going to have gifts created of you if you're crying.
Absolutely, but within the game, you can use tears to garner sympathy. If you're in a situation where you, again, are being painted as the villain, you start generating some tears. The Bachelor will have to come over, will have to put his arm around you, especially on a fucking group date. It's a quick way to single yourself out as like, oh, the Bachelor has to pay attention to me now. And the tears can be anything. It doesn't have to be any kind of like super emotionally heavy shit. Hell, we saw it with, who was it? Annalise and her bumper car nightmare. When they took him to the carnival and she was like, I hate bumper cars. I had a bumper car accident when I was a kid. And she started crying and he had to go console her for a second. Yeah. As insane as that is.
It's basically throwing a flag on the group date, being like, come talk to me. Yeah. It's my turn. But it also should be used in serious situations.
For sure. If you
are playing your personal tragedy card, you absolutely should use tears in this situation. If you don't have tears and you're saying your PTC, it makes it less believable. It's less tragic and it's less effective gameplay.
I completely agree. And I think you should also be using them in happy moments. Moments where you're out on the beach together and it's so beautiful and the fireworks are going off. Whatever the one-on-one date may be, when the emotions are high, it's okay to use your tears in that moment to once again up the emotional stakes, to really prove to the Bachelor that you are there for TRR. Whatever's happening is getting to you on a level so deep that you are shedding your tears.
It's also a piece of equipment that you can have your designated family members on your hometown visit use. If your parent is crying or your siblings, it's showing how close you are to your family, how it's painting you in the best light. It's saying, yeah, you could be the next Bachelorette if not. Like, I mean, who wouldn't want to like help this person find love who has their family so emotionally invested in them? Especially if you can get your dad to cry. I feel like the dad's crying like actually gets me every time.
Yeah, dad tears is pretty unbeatable. If you can get your dad to cry, it's especially in this show where kind of traditional masculine norms are presented as the best thing to be and dads all have to be tough, et cetera, et cetera. A crying dad is strong.
Yeah, and it's representing that his walls have been broken down, that he's open to this process. You should also use tears in your exit interview. It shows you were there for TRR. You let down your walls. The producers love when someone is crying and needs a love redemption story, a la Becca Kufrin in that finale. I mean, she was maybe not going to be the Bachelorette, but basically you just saw so much victimhood that you were like, well, she has to be the Bachelorette.
I mean, almost everyone uses their tears in an exit speech. Almost everyone. The only ones that don't are usually night one, even night one people do.
That is a time that you shouldn't use your tears though, night one. Basically, emotional connections are not formed and it's going to indicate drunkenness or emotional instability if you're crying on the first night.
To The Bachelor. But if you exit on the first night.
Oh, right. Demi Burnett used tears pretty effectively in the Instagram era, I would say. She basically produced her own season of Bachelor in Paradise, punctuating it with tears.
Yeah, I mean, she really employed a lot of the strategies we're talking about in ways that we hadn't yet seen. Walls going up, walls coming down, walls coming sideways. I mean, shit, when she was dating Derek, leading us all on, we don't know about Christian, we don't know about this other relationship she's got going on. She had walls up with him, and then they started to come down. And then it was like, she started crying, and here's the reason why I can't date you. There's this other girl. I mean, it was fascinating that her walls were up about that.
Her walls came down with Bachelor Nation by us slowly getting that information.
But she was erecting walls, destroying them, and building new ones almost constantly. And it was all the walls going up and down were all punctuated with tears, for sure. She really was a master at it. God, I truly hope we get to see her on more than just another season of Bachelor in Paradise. I think it's a very long shot that she's going to be the next Bachelorette, but fuck, I don't think it's a 0%. I think she might do it.
I'm hearing a lot of rumors that it might be Hannah. She has 2.5 million Instagram followers now.
What's Demi at? 1.5 or 1.6?
At the time of this recording, Demi has 1.4 million.
Well, we'll see. We'll see what happens to Demi. But anyway, back to our strategy guide. How to win The Bachelor?
So the last piece of our toolbox that we want to talk about, and a piece of equipment that every player should come in with, some players are going to have better tools in this arena than others, is a special talent. This game is a pageant. A special talent will help you. It's basically anything that'll make you stand out in the field, be more memorable. They can help get you screen time and propel you further in the game.
And some can even become your entire identity, like our new Bachelor, Peter, is a pilot. They're going to have him flying a fucking plane in almost every episode. I can guarantee it. Or on Ari's season, everything was about some fucking car somewhere.
I'm going to take you on a one-on-one. We're going to this restaurant that looks like a car. Do you remember that shit? It was crazy.
Yeah, that was his entire personality. And the last pilot that they had as The Bachelor, they made the theme song On the Wings of Love.
Mm-hmm.
So you basically were reinforcing his special talent the whole season.
But good use of your special talent as a piece of equipment can garner you screen time. It can really make the producers start to build packages around whatever that talent is.
It does help get an intro package on the show, which helps you get followers for the whole season if you're in one of the intro packages and the audience knows more about you. One of the most memorable ones to me was Kendall, who had both the ukulele and her taxidermy as her special talents, and they came up frequently throughout the season.
They had an entire date where they went to go do taxidermy. She generated that. She produced that by coming in with a special talent that was unique enough. The producers were like, okay, we gotta fucking do something with that.
They also referenced it whenever there was an animal on the show, and they're like, Kendall, what would you do about this? But yeah, you should do your special talent as much as possible around the house. You can use metaphors to tie your special talent into like narrating how the dates are going, that kind of thing. There's often a group date that's a talent show where you're blatantly using your special talent.
We'll never forget Jed.
I'll be your Mr. Right Girl.
I will never forget that song.
Neither will I.
I will die thinking about that song.
That is our little strategy guide for this week. We've given you all the pieces of equipment that you use, the personal tragedy card or PTC. Your walls, put them down.
You got your expanding love levels that you should dole out at strategic points throughout your game. You've got your trinkets, things you can give to the Bachelor.
The hoodoo, the hug jump. The
hoodoo, of course, and your special talents.
And your tears, don't forget.
And your tears.
So hopefully, to any equipment. Prospective players out there, this has been helpful. Now that you understand what your equipment is, you can start to begin to understand how to use it. I really hope anyone who gets on any season of our beloved game has listened to any of this and starts to employ it. I'd be very curious to see how far they get in the game. I mean, I know that they would win.
they would become
the next Bachelorette.
They would win. This is how to win.
But thank you guys once again for stepping behind the curtain with us. Before we go, what's the dwab at?
It has been 6,439 days without a Black Bachelor.
And counting.
Please rate, review, and subscribe on iTunes. Tell a friend about the podcast as we spread this very important message.
Especially if you have any friends who have toyed with the idea of going on the show or auditioning to go on the show.
Yes.
Please let them know that we are here to help. And if they have any questions they want to ask us specifically, hit us up on our Instagrams.
Yeah, we'd love to hear what kind of experimental strategies you guys have come up with.
And just a little tantalizing titillation for what's coming up in the future weeks. We are going to keep up with our How to Win the Bachelor strategy guide. We're also working on our first induction to the Hall of Fame. I think you know who it might be.
Annalise.
Yeah, it's Annalise. No, she's not making the Hall of Fame. Sorry. We will see you guys next week. Thank you once again. Until then.
Praise be Lord Harrison.